Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. The Beltway Blitz every day at noon. Teams in town you care the most about, covered, jammed into one segment. A little bit later in the hour, Ross Tucker on the NFL. We will talk with him about the loss of Joe Bugle at 80, who he played for, as well as some NFL notes from around the league. Cam Newton getting his one-year deal with the Patriots. What does it do for New England as a contender? But let's kick off the Beltway Blitz right now. Got to start with the Nats today. The biggest story in D.C. sports is that Ryan Zimmerman, I guess not surprisingly, and Joe Ross, in my opinion, surprisingly, both electing not to participate in Major League Baseball's return with the Nats. Two of the four players in the big leagues who are opting out right here in D.C. Barry Sferluga covers the Nats for the Washington Post. Barry, what'd you think, first of all, that two Nats are out, and second, that only four players in all of baseball so far have decided not to play?
I'll take the second part first and say I would not be surprised if over the course of the week we don't hear about some more baseball players who opt out. I'm with you, Grant. I think the Zimmerman thing was, if not completely predictable, at least a little bit telegraphed after last week. He did a coronavirus diary entry with Howard Fendrich of the Associated Press, which he'd been doing over the course of this pandemic. And he kind of said, look, I'm walking through this stuff. Who am I putting at risk? I've got a mother with MS. I've got a baby who's less than a month old. We're going to be traveling. We're not in a bubble. How do I handle this? I think you could kind of at least see what Zim's reasoning was after that piece came out. Joe Ross caught me a bit off guard. I don't know the details of his situation and his reasoning. I don't know his family situation. but it's an interesting one because in a way it impacts the roster potentially a little bit more because it whittles down the candidates for a fifth starting spot, whereas Zim, kind of is duplicated by Howie Kendrick in a right-handed hitting platoon type first baseman. So roster wise, perhaps the Ross thing impacts them more.
Yeah, Barry, and we discussed that very thing earlier. And another thing that I posited, and I want to get your reaction to it, is if you gave me a list of 100 players and told me that a few guys were going to opt out, I don't know that I would have picked Joe Ross before 99 or 100. I mean, that guy seems as happy-go-lucky, carefree, an unbelievable physical specimen, like an unconcerned, sort of unflappable kind of guy. And I think it does go to your point that they're going to be more like this when it comes to unexpected withdrawals this year for Major League Baseball. If you told me that Sean Doolittle said no, I get that. Much chronicled. Same with Ryan Zimmerman. I get that. A veteran that's made his money. But for a young guy entering his age 27 season, healthy as an ox, it's really surprising. Just your thoughts there.
Well, I think what we don't know, Danny, in any of these situations until it's outlined for us is, who is in my immediate inner circle, my close family, that could be compromised even if I'm strong as an ox and I'm coming home. And I mean, I think as we analyze sports' return in general, you could extend this to college football. Yeah, the 22-year-olds are probably statistically at less risk, but if they're coming into contact, direct contact with 60-year-olds that are at greater risk, well, that's not doing anybody any good either. I do think in baseball, service time is an issue. It is much easier for a guy like Ryan Zimmerman, who's entering his 15th year, has made more than $140 million in his career, to opt out of 60 games that would have paid him $740,000 or so. The guys who are caught and who are asked to be put in a situation that could be untenable are those who are trying to work toward arbitration or trying to work toward free agency. And if they voluntarily give up their job this week, they get no credit for that service time and essentially are set back by a year. That's a tough, tough, tough call.
Barry, I know that if I just decided that I wasn't going back into the studio when everyone else did, that people at work would be upset with me or jaw about me behind my back. What about the clubhouse? I think Zimmerman's got enough deposits in the bank, and everyone knows his family situation, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know about the Joe Ross situation, so I won't use him specifically as an example, but around baseball, if young guys like him just come out and say, hey, I don't necessarily have a family member at risk, I just don't want to play these 60 games and risk myself. Do you think if you're in the clubhouse and you are putting your body and your family's lives at risk, that you would have some type of animosity or resentment potentially?
I think, Grant, and this is all supposition, but I think that there will be a wide berth for guys who are making a decision based on health concerns. And I think that because they also will be sacrificing a paycheck. So if pick a national, Juan Soto, Adam Eaton, Kurt Suzuki, decides I'm playing and I'm all in and maybe I have some ancillary concerns, but I feel like the situation is okay, they're getting their, you know, X million dollar prorated paychecks at the end of the season, and Joe Ross is not. So there's a sacrifice, a financial sacrifice that the guys who opt out are making. I also think, you know, we don't yet have a central character. Ryan Zimmerman is a huge deal for the Washington Nationals, but he's near the end of his career and is not, you know, in a 162 game season, is not designed to play 150 games. If we get to a point where a Juan Soto or a Michael Conforto or a Mike Trout, or, you know, just pick somebody who is central to their team's chances of winning a championship, that will be a more interesting conversation of how that plays out in the clubhouse.
Barry, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
There he goes. That is Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post. Let's talk some hoops, please, Tommy. About Chris Miles is with us, NBA Television, NBC Sports Washington, talking to the return of some basketball. Chris, my heart sung when I heard Tommy Shepard say they're going to try to take care and monitor the minutes and usage and weight of Bradley Beal in this weird little 8-game push. I would faint. I would be so upset if in this weird sprint they played him 44 minutes tonight and then something happened, God forbid. That made my heart sing that they're going to approach this in a very smart way. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good. But again, if it's only 8 games, I mean, I kind of wonder for – we've never seen anything like this as far as right. guys going out there and trying to be in mid-season form. And so we have to look at this as almost like the preseason or the early part of the season. And those guys take time to ramp up, whether it's 4 or 5 games or like when they're coming back from injury. So it makes sense exactly what he's saying. I mean, Tommy Shepard's no rookie in this business, man.
Chris, are you finding yourself curious, excited, nervous about this reboot? Like, how would you describe as an NBA mark and lifer how you're feeling about the end of this month?
Well, I think all of us involved are really nervous. You see the news with the Brooklyn Nets and you go, okay, hopefully this isn't a trend heading in the wrong direction, because at first, what was it, 16 of 302 players tested positive for COVID-19. I mean, that was a great number to see. But then you see Spencer Dinwiddie, DeAndre Jordan. You add them to the list. Then you see Spencer Dinwiddie say, hey, I had symptoms, which is something that we haven't really seen a lot of guys come out and say. Then Rudy Gobert, hey, I'm still not back to being myself. So it starts to create some more trepidation. But I think if it's not this slow leak of this happening, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, I think we can be excited. But if it does become a situation where a lot more guys start talking in this way, then I think this season could be in jeopardy again.
Yeah, it's like every time anybody gets together to do a sport, so many people are testing positive, seeing that there are a couple Nugget staffers that did. You mentioned the Nets, Chris, and, you know, we all know what's happening in California, Arizona, Florida. You know, there's a spike in Minnesota. I mean, it's not going anywhere. right? And I don't know when it goes somewhere. I don't know when we're out of this thing, but we're not yet. And I think that's pretty clear. And that's what's scary about it. What is the worst case that they start and stop? Do you think that's on the table?
Well, I think it's definitively on the table, but I think the worst case is the season not starting at all. So if you say the worst case, season not starting at all, period, because I think the NBA is giving it the best try that they can. I think if, you know, we get down there and a couple of guys test positive and they decide, look, this is dangerous, we can't have everyone here, I think it still seems like they tried their best to make it happen. So I do think the worst case scenario is guys are practicing, you get to July 7th or you get to July 10th, and then they have to shut it down before games. I think that's possibly the worst case scenario.
I'm not sure how or why this started, but the last couple days, national NBA people have been crushing the fact that the Wizards are involved in this at all, which makes me more happy that they're involved when Stephen A. Smith and people are ranting that they shouldn't be here. Do you know how we got to that point where now all of a sudden we've known that they were playing for weeks? The last day the Wizards have become like a target?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me, I just have to be subjective about this. And Screaming A. Smith doesn't take as much time to come up with creative ideas as you guys do, okay? He just starts to go off on these random tangents. I mean, I don't know what – look, all right, you look at it, they had to get an Eastern Conference team and the Wizards were sitting in ninth place. What are you going to have, you know, all
skip
of the Western Conference teams?
Skip them, go to 10th,
right? What are you talking about? And that's kind of the point of, like, he had to find something to scream about that day. That's kind of his shtick, so I understand. I mean, the Spurs are in it, just a piece pop. You know, they had to even things out in the sense of having 22 teams. That's why the Wizards are in. And I think for the Wizards, if you're putting that glass half full, okay, Troy Brown, you averaged 10 in your second year. You got some time. Let's see what you can do without Davis Bertans coming in and giving us, you know, 18 to 20 points during this stretch. Let's see if you can increase your scoring average from 10. Let's see if you can increase how you're playing and what kind of condition you come back in, because you're a guy that we have to make a decision on. So, right? So it's kind of like those things. The Wizards get another sample size to see what guys have. I think it's great for them.
Chris, you're the best, buddy. Always appreciate it, dude. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Chris Miles. I'll be watching him on NBA TV. You can check him out on NBC Sports Washington locally as well. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. The massive story in D.C. sports today. The Nats will move forward.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Without two of their players, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross, are you surprised that only four players so far in Major League Baseball have opted out? And how damaging a blow to the Nats will those two setbacks be? Next on G&D. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. It is 12:18, which means we are headed toward a 12:45 movie club. Last night, we watched a brand new Netflix flick that is number one on Netflix on the trends of what everyone's watching right now. It's a Will Ferrell movie. We will break it down for you coming up in about 27 minutes. Between now and then, Ross Tucker at the bottom of the hour. We'll go around the NFL, talk Cam Newton of the Patriots with a guy that played for Joe Bugle here in Washington, so we could talk to him about Bugs as well. But we got to get back to the big story of the day. It's been a little while since you and I discussed this. We just got Barry Sfaluga's thoughts of the Washington Post. Ryan Zimmerman says he is going to be out. Joe Ross will not play for the Nationals as well. First on Zim. Look, his mother with MS and his baby, just a couple of weeks old, are two wonderful reasons for him to have trepidation about going and playing and putting his body at risk and bringing C-19 back home. He said in a statement to the Associated Press in a journal that he'd been authoring with Howard Fendrich a week or so ago that he wouldn't be able to see his mom. And I'm extrapolating a little bit further, just guessing, but his family probably wouldn't be able to see his mom if he's interacting directly with them until after the baseball season. That's months of not being able to see his parents, which, having gone through that like a lot of you have, that's not fun. And particularly when you've got a brand new baby, that's important not just for you that they see in or around your baby, but for the grandparents. That's really brutal. And I've realized this, you know, on older couples or grandparents or what have you, to be around those kids and family and to have that in their life from a mental health standpoint. So totally get and expected after what Ryan Zimmerman said last week that he might not play. The stunner was Joe Ross, and maybe he's going to come out with a statement where he says, hey, I've got somebody in the family with this situation. Who knows? His father is a pediatrician, and his mother is an ER nurse, and you'd have to imagine, based on that, he has a lot of intel and information from what they've dealt with firsthand from COVID-19, and it could be as simple as a guy in his mid-20s saying, it's 60 games. I'm going to make, instead of the $1.5 million I was supposed to, $555,000. The juice isn't worth the squeeze for me. Curious to see what he says or if he ends up releasing a statement, because the other players who have opted out have done that. But those are the two guys, and I guess my huge takeaway yesterday, Danny, was if 27 players in the big leagues said they weren't going to play yesterday and two of them were with the Nationals, I wouldn't have thought that much about it. But the fact that two of the three – from all day yesterday when we were covering this and waiting for more players to come out, and to this moment still, at 12:21 in the afternoon, a couple days before the report date, four major league players of the thousands around the big leagues have come out and said that they're not going to play, and two are Washington Nationals. That's crazy. That's a big story to me.
It absolutely is. And again, it's located right here. Now, I'm with Barry. I think that more are coming. But as of right now, your sample is this. Half the guys play, or in this case, will not play, are in and around Washington, D.C. And to touch on what you said about Zim, it's not just that he can't see his mom. He wouldn't be able to see siblings. He wouldn't be able to see his in-laws because they're going to go see mom. You know what I mean? Like, it's the entire extension when you're talking about a pandemic and touch points and the spreading of this thing. You are completely isolated at that stage. And when you're talking about a newborn, we think we know right now. We think we've got a good grasp on this thing in terms of what it's doing or not doing to kids. But it's easy to say you're going to take that chance. You got a lot of secondhand bravery. I don't know how I'd feel if I had a three-week-old. I don't know how I'd feel about this. I don't know if we'd be extending and opening up our circle a little bit to include my mother-in-law, my dad, one group of friends with our kids who are friends. I don't know that I'd be doing that right now. It's easy to be confident. It's easy to swag around and say, look at the data. That's good. That's all well and good, but we still don't totally know. We still don't totally know. So I don't blame him in the slightest. And I'm curious as to what Joe Ross's reasoning is, not in a judgmental kind of way, but I'd like to hear from him. I'd like to know what he's thinking about when it comes to his career and the repercussions therein. Again, not to Dan Dockich this thing and compare what he does to a construction worker or something else. It's not the same. But I want to know. But Zim has been very clear with his reasoning on this. And I also think an element of this, Grant, that's I don't want to say it's overlooked, and you were astute yesterday pointing this out. I think you're dead right, is I wonder if there was a – we got to this point, right, where I've got to weigh these things in his life as he discussed, right? And those are significant things. They're not to be discounted. But maybe he was on the fence. This whole deal with the owners and labor and how we got here, I wonder if that wasn't the tipping point. I wonder if it wasn't. You know, just and again, it's he's more mature than that, talking about Zim, but basically saying, I could see this side, I could see that side. But you know what? Those guys were such jerks. I ain't doing it. I wonder if there was something to that in that part to kind of to push him over to the side of sitting this year out. I don't know the answer to that. I have no info that anybody else doesn't have on this. But I do wonder if that was a slight factor, not necessarily the deciding factor, but something that may have pushed him towards one decision.
Well, here's what I know. He didn't mention it in his Associated Press Journal on accident. I know that. I know that he brought it up for a reason. Right? He pens right. this piece on the fact that he's considering not playing, and he said, and let me tell you this, owners are not going to be taking on the risk with us. Owners are not going to be traveling with us. He talked about how the NBA has a bubble where they will effectively quarantine players. The NHL has these two hubs where guys are going to go there, and once you get there, you should be pretty safe. He said, that's not the case in baseball. We're going to be flying around the country. And they've done what they can to mitigate travel, but they're still flying to Miami. For a couple series, you're still on trains. You're still going up and down the East Coast. And his point was, we're dealing with that, and other sports are not. That's a real concern. That's an issue. And owners won't be. I mean, he mentions they'll be sitting at home. He doesn't say counting their money, but he probably thought counting their money. They'll be sitting in their living rooms watching us play. He brought that up for a reason. But the Zim part, I totally get. I do. Yep. My concern for him, and that might be slightly overstated, is I just would hate for him to go out this way.
Yep.
You know, at 35, he'll be 36 next year. It took a while for him and the Nats to figure out whatever was going on with that contract situation this year. And he has said, at least, I don't know if he'll still feel this way, but he has said that he doesn't want to play anywhere else, that he wants to be a National. He came out later in the offseason. I think a year ago when we talked to him at, like, spring training, about, I think I even brought up the idea of, like, what about just going and being a DH in the American League? And he didn't say no, but then this offseason he came out and said it'll be the Nats or nowhere. So will they at 36, after he doesn't play this season, come back to the table and give him a new contract? I don't know. And that would stink if there's a footnote now on his ledger for his career that COVID-19 essentially ended Ryan Zimmerman's playing time with the Nationals. So that was one thing I thought about. But I get it. Like, he's made $137 million. And if you just think about the four guys yesterday, okay? Mm-hmm. Zim's made $137 million. Mike Leake has made $94 million, almost $95.
That's unbelievable.
Ian Desmond has made $91 million. Okay. Well, he's the eighth overall pick. I mean, he's not a scrub, per se. Ian Desmond, $91 million. So these three guys have made over $90 million in their careers. Joe Ross has made $3 million. That's not nothing. And the people listening are going, why is he acting like $3 million is nothing? Well, from a baseball standpoint, there are four guys who have decided they don't need the money this year. Three of them have made close to $100 million in their career, and the other is Joe Ross, who's turning down basically one-seventh of the money he's ever made. And that's why I'm just interested to hear his take. I don't judge that he's doing it. I've said since day one, whichever decision players make should be respected. It's your decision. It's up to you. No one can tell you what you should be doing. It's up to your comfort. But you got to at least admit that the numbers make this intriguing. Three guys that are close to $100 million, 100 times over millionaires, and then Joe Ross. And there's 1,800 players, and one who's in his mid-20s, seemingly very healthy, and we'll see if he comes out and says something otherwise. I'm leaving all this open as we get more information. But one has come out and said, yeah, I'm in my mid-20s and I'm healthy, but I'm not going to play. I'm curious to see how many other guys join him. And I'm with you and Barry. I think there will be more. Uh-huh. But I nowhere near what I originally thought. Yesterday when we talked about this, I assumed that there would be dozens. There's clearly not going to be dozens, I don't think. More is what? Is more 7? Is more 8? Is more 11? I guess that's still possible. Sure. Like, I was thinking it was going to be 30 or 40 guys, and that just does not look like it's going to happen.
And I think the comparison between the two, I think, is important. And that's why, again, we keep coming back to this, that the Joe Ross decision is that much more surprising. The story of Ryan Zimmerman's career has pretty much been written. A decade and a half, all in one place, Mr. National, the clutch moments, the World Series home run, the home run against the Dodgers, home run against the Cubs a couple years ago. I mean, the amazing moments that he's had where he was a Gold Glove caliber third baseman, where he was, you know, second in WAR in the National League over a couple of years to only Ryan Braun, where he was a kind of an underrated, under, you know, soft-spoken star, basically a 290 with 25 homer player for a couple seasons in a row there, really four seasons when he was able to play enough. The injuries, the battling back, the renaissance year in 2017 when he was finally healthy, where he was the comeback player of the year, hit over 300 with 36 bombs, having his career season. Like, that story is pretty much written. And now it's, you know, you're in the twilight and you move to platoon guy or part-time player or, you know, just sort of guy that as soon as he walks away, he either has a job in the front office or can open a car dealership in a restaurant, you know? Like, you know what's written. It's not that way for Joe Ross. That's what makes it that much more surprising, is that he's in a more tenuous position. But good for him for doing what he thinks.
Ross Tucker is next on Grant and Danny. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back, and thanks, as always, for making the show part of your day. On the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now is Sports NFL Insider from Radio.com, Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, available on Radio.com/Dell. Ross, there's a couple things skins-wise we want to get to with you in a second, but we'd be remiss if we didn't start with the big news in the NFL. Cam Newton is a New England Patriot. Do you think this makes them a contender again, or are you in wait-and-see mode to see what Cam's got left?
Probably more wait-and-see mode. You know, think of it this way, right? The Carolina Panthers could have had Cam Newton this year with a new head coach coming in for 1 year, $18 million, no guaranteed money, no obligations beyond it, and had a free spin at a 31-year-old to see if he can be the guy for years to come. And they didn't want it. I mean, they didn't want it. They didn't think he had it anymore. Because let's be honest, if the Carolina Panthers did think Cam could still play at that high of a level, why would you not have had him as your quarterback this year? And then even to take it a step further, and I know he's been asked about it, but if Ron Rivera really thought Cam was going to come back and play at a high level, I just find it hard to believe he wouldn't have been pounding the table to get him in there to Washington to at least give him another option in case Haskins isn't the guy. So those two things are the things that jump out to me about Cam Newton. Now, listen, we've never seen a skill set like his before. I don't know if you guys have ever seen him in person. It's crazy how big he is. I love watching him run the football. But there's a reason why those two teams didn't want him. There's a reason why Cam signed for peanuts with the only team that actually offered him a contract. And I hope it works out. I hope he's awesome. It'd be fun to watch. But I feel like people are forgetting the Patriots' history. There's a lot of guys that are big names that sign there later in their careers. Albert Haynesworth, Torrey Holt, you know, John Lynch, Chad Ochocinco, Joey Galloway, Reggie Wayne, never to be heard from again. It's where a lot of careers, frankly, go to die, because guys go there, they don't fit, it doesn't work, and the thought process is, well, if Belichick can't get any value out of him, we won't either. So it's a great move by the Patriots, because there's almost no risk and there's a ton of reward. So it's a great move for them, but this could go really one of two ways, and I think it's two extremes.
Yeah, he'll make, what is it, like 1/18th of what Nick Foles is going to make this year? So that's smart. You're 100% right, Ross. Who's the favorite now in the AFC East? I just think it's the Patriots, because it's the Patriots and Belichick, and we've got 11 straight of these division titles to fall back on. Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts. I wouldn't say anybody that goes with the Patriots is nuts, but I'm going with the Buffalo Bills. I mean, the Buffalo Bills have an absolutely loaded, beautiful roster at this point. They've got a quarterback that got some playoff experience under his belt. He's in year three. They brought in a true number one receiver in Stephon Diggs that he didn't have before. I just think it's the Bills' time. Meanwhile, for the Patriots, they got a lot of question marks at quarterback. We've already been over that. Like, I don't think And I've gotten criticized on Twitter and on my podcast for saying this at Ross Tucker NFL, but I don't think it's a lock that Cam Newton even starts. I mean, Belichick never looks at things, guys, through a one-year prism. He's looking 2, 3, 4 years down the line as well. It's better for him if Stidham starts. Like, if Stidham's ready to go and as good as Cam, they're going to go with Stidham. He's cheaper, he's younger, he's healthier, and they can build around him for the long haul. I mean, there's a reason why he played Tom Brady even when Drew Bledsoe was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So I think people just lose sight of those things. I'm not sold that Cam's going to all of a sudden be able to get back to MVP form. The Patriots also lost a lot when you're talking about guys like Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins. I just think that they lost more than people realize. I think they're more like a 500 club. I like the Bills.
I had not thought for a second about that, but Ross, it makes sense. I mean, you just don't know what Bill Belichick's going to do, and he doesn't think like everybody else. And our guest is Ross Tucker, who, of course, is on Twitter, as he said, at Ross Tucker NFL. Should we be buying the hype? Dwayne Haskins is having a whale of an offseason physically. He's lost weight. He's cut up and shredded. His videos and pictures, he's hired people to kind of chronicle, you know, or hang out with at practices and stuff. And I'm starting to kind of fall for the thing I normally laugh at, which is the player who just posts a lot of videos. But he looks great, and he's grinding. Should we buy into that at all?
I think it's a real positive. I think it depends on how much you want to buy in. I mean, that stuff's all great, but what really matters is whether or not he throws it to the right guy, he throws it accurately, and does what he's supposed to do. I thought he showed some real positives last year. That Eagles game in particular jumps out to me. I thought, you know, with all the negativity throughout the season towards Dwayne, and then even when he took the selfie on the sideline, I was like, man, I don't know about this guy. But he showed me a lot in that Eagles game and down the stretch. So I think you stack that on top of what he's done this offseason, I think you have to be encouraged, because so much of that position is professionalism. Like, so much of that position is being the first guy there, the last guy to leave, setting the tempo for your teammates, knowing everything inside and out. And it seems like he's figured that out. I don't know if he had it last year. I feel like this offseason, he's figured that part of it out. Some guys, it takes years. I remember Big Ben for years was known as the last guy to get there, first guy to leave. And it took Ben a while to realize he couldn't do it just based on physical ability.
Ross, Joe Bugle passed over the weekend. I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about him. Just what were your impressions of Bugs, a guy that was a legendary boss hog for those incredible Redskins runs in the 80s and early 90s, then he came back and coached again. Just what did you know about Joe Bugle?
Well, so that was my last offensive line coach. I had 9 in the NFL, including some big names like Scarnecchia and McNally. And there are 2 things that jump out about Coach Bugle. One is, and I don't know that we had this word back then, but there's never been an offensive line coach alive that had the swag that Joe Bugle had. I mean, back then I might have called it confident or arrogant or whatever, but it was awesome. He acted like we were the toughest, best offensive line. Now, I got hurt in the 3rd preseason game, so I wasn't really there for the season. But in offseason, in training camp, just the way he walked around the practice field, it was like it was his field. It was his offensive line's field. And we were just letting everybody else be there. I mean, it was awesome. I think that we felt that. Like, he made us feel like being the offensive lineman for the Washington Redskins, we were the quarterback. Like, we were the stars. And maybe that goes back to the Hogs days in the 80s when the offensive line was probably the common denominator between the 3 Super Bowls. I mean, he was the guy. They were the group. And so he projected that to us, and I loved it. He also preached the importance of physicality and body blows more than all the other offensive line coaches I had. I mean, everybody else wants you to be physical and stuff, but he would be furious if you had an opportunity to physically punish the guy you were going against and you didn't do it. it would drive. He believed that those body blows had an impact over the course of the game, and it was vitally important that you take your shots. I loved it. I felt that way. I agree with him. And everything we did, we were coming forward. We were hitting you as hard as we can. The guy was awesome.
That's great info. What a story. That's so cool. That's awesome. He walked around basically like, you guys are the quarterbacks. We got 10 of them in the room here. But we've heard that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From a few of the legends that we've had on from those O-lines as well. Ross, really appreciate the time. Means a lot that we could get you to talk Bugs and some NFL with us. Thank you.
Absolutely. See you guys.
Be well. Thanks, Ross. There's Ross Tucker on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Our radio.com sports NFL insider. All of our insider calls are brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, available on radio.com/Dell. Movie Club is next. We watch the newest Will Ferrell offering. We'll break it down in a moment. From Eurovision Song Contest, the story of Fire Saga, which just came out on Netflix within the last week. It's the number one movie on Netflix right now. Rachel McAdams and Will Ferrell are the stars and the singers of this song. I can't even say it and get through it. But I'll tell you this, audiences are rating Eurovision Song Contest, the story of Fire Saga, at 80%. Critics, not surprisingly, didn't love this movie. It is... Basically, here's what I would say about this movie, Danny. It's Blades of Glory. You trade in the skates for a microphone and a stage. Instead of skating, you are singing, and then it's just Blades of Glory again. When aspiring musicians Lars and Sigrid are given the opportunity to represent their country at the world's biggest song competition, they finally have a chance to prove that any dream worth having is a dream worth fighting for. So the big debate was there were two sides here. Cakes thinks this is one of the worst movies that's ever been made. Dar said, it was fun. I didn't hate it. It's pretty good. Now, I don't know that it's pretty good necessarily, but I am more Team Dar than I am Team Cakes after watching this.
Really?
It was not terror by any means. I mean, if you don't like Will Ferrell, you won't like it. But if you didn't hate Blades of Glory, like I asked Cakes, did you mind Blades of Glory? He's like, no, that was pretty good. I don't know how you could like Blades of Glory and hate this. It's the same movie. If you watched Semi-Pro and you didn't hate it, yeah. Then I don't know why you would hate this. But I would say on a 1 to 10 scale, I'll give it like a 6, 6.5. It's exactly what I thought it would be. It's better than the trailers looked, which I'll say. I didn't think I'd be able to get through it. I liked it more than I thought I would. Is it good? I can't use the word good. Dar used the word fun. I would say it's probably fun. That might be a little bit aggressive for me. But overall, Danny, I would say this is just the latest Will Ferrell offering that's a lot like a bunch of the other ones. So I can't see, like, liking Blades of Glory and hating this. I think it's just the same thing with a different format.
I think you can, and I found a way to do just that. This is a 2.5-hour. I mean, I guess it's just over 2 hours. It felt like the longest movie I've ever watched, by the way. It's a 2-hour American Idol episode, except it's taking place in Europe. They didn't know what they wanted to be, right? They didn't know if they wanted to be a fun movie, like Step Brothers was fun or Blades of Glory was fun, where the whole time it's over the top. and funny, and it's parody. Then all of a sudden, you got like real choreographed dance and like these musical numbers. That it was this mismatch of nonsense. It was so boring, and these weird themes, and like the Pierce Brosnan's character made no sense. None of it.
You didn't like Pierce Brosnan's character?
Not at all. Like all of a sudden, for no reason, he decides that he likes his son again. Like either. I don't know. It just there was nothing that Will Ferrell did that won him over. He just all of a sudden decided after walking out that it was okay. It's just, I don't know, man. I think Rachel McAdams is so good, and she's so earnest at everything she does. Even like a comic book movie like Doctor Strange, she gives a great performance in this role that admittedly is very limited. There's like not much to this role. She's like the female sidekick, but she's just so good. She's so good in this too because she's good in everything that she does. I don't know. I don't know if I'm with Cakes that it's the worst movie ever made, but it's certainly one of the worst movies I've seen this year, and we've seen some bad ones. I hated it.
So, again, the scale is like Dar or Cakes. I'm way closer to Dar than Cakes. I think Cakes panning this movie way too harshly. It's a Will Ferrell movie. It's kind of what you expect it to be. I don't think it's worse than the other Will Ferrell movies. But that having been said, my comment would be, I think you went into this movie prepared to hate it and didn't give it a chance. That's my comment. My question is, did you laugh out loud or like chuckle or anything at any point?
I had a chuckle. I'm trying to remember when it was. I think it may have been when Will Ferrell was just, you know what? I think it was when Ferrell and the Greek girl were about to get together and he just sort of like in casual conversation started talking about his junk like a Volvo. That got me to chuckle. Just it was very matter of fact and very plain.
Reoccurring shtick with the Americans, where he was like talking about all the things in America, like Starbucks and stuff, because he's obviously playing.
That wasn't the worst. Yeah, that wasn't the worst.
I thought that was funny as well.
And then they were the heroes that drove him.
Let's tag in Thommy because we need to know if he's Team Dar or Team Cakes. So you are who? You're Team Cakes, then? Would you say?
I learned a couple of years ago that it's better to fade Cakes and bet against Cakes. I enjoyed this movie.
There he is.
6.5 out of 10. Ooh. I didn't have an incredible amount of LOLs, laugh out louds, as I would say, but I thought that it was a feel-good story. I thought I liked the happy ending, and of course, I loved all the terrible music that accompanied this movie. So I would say overall, I enjoyed it. I would not go and see it in the theaters based off of the trailers, but it does get a passing grade. I side more with Dar today.
So that makes two of the three of us. Danny, are you saying you're Team Cakes? Because you basically said you think Cakes was overboard a little bit. But if you have to choose a team, you have to wear a jersey that says Cakes or Dar. What are you wearing?
Team Cakes. I'm living in the house. I may not live in the upstairs master bedroom where he is, calling it a 1 out of 10. I think this was like a 2.2 out of 10. I think it was Drek. And really, really bad, but he called it like the worst thing he's ever seen. I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen. It's certainly really bad, though. So I would say
I think a year from now, I would rather watch this than Blades of Glory or Semi-Pro, I think. Rachel McAdams is really, really good. And I mean, some of the jokes are, you know, predictable, and it's the same. By the way, you could go down a rabbit hole where I've been doing this today because someone hit me up about this. The Eurovision Song Contest is real.
Yes,
and
it is.
Some of the performers that are in this movie are actual Eurovision participants, which is hilarious. And if you look it up, it's this wacky and it's this weird and it's crazy. Dar, do you feel vindicated in any way? There was a lot of pressure on you, and two of the three of us are on your side here that it wasn't bad.
I feel absolute vindication. I called exactly how this would go. Danny would hate it. Thom would love it. Brant would think it was a little too long and still like it. All of the songs are really catchy and funny. The guy that screams out, play Ya Ya Ding Dong throughout the entire movie is really funny.
Yeah.
The Are They Brother Sister bit going back and forth until the end is funny. I don't know. I thought it was a fun movie. I rewatched it last night, with my wife. She hated it the first time. She came around and is on my team now. She thought it was funny the second time she watched it. I don't know. It was fun. I would absolutely watch it again, and I say that because I did. I watched it again last night.
You did twice, yes.
So
yeah,
I mean,
twice in 3 days is aggressive.
I wanted to give a true and fair and balanced opinion of it. And I think it was good. I am going from it was fun to it was fun and it was borderline good. Like, it's definitely like a 6.5.
Borderline good. How about that? I mean, I think Allison's probably watched, if we've done like 90 movies in Movie Club now or something, maybe five of them total. This was one of them. And, I mean, she giggled a few different times. Like, she hates horror movies and doesn't like anything rated R she won't watch, or like gratuitous violence or anything with like a lot of sex or anything. Like, she would never watch Game of Thrones or anything like that. She basically watches the movies that you would watch with your kids. Like, that's what she does. But she, for whatever reason, wanted to watch this, and I think she enjoyed it. But Will Ferrell's hair slayed me. The opening scene where he's singing and they zoom in on his terrible teeth, like, that popped me hard right off the bat, and I was in a good place. And I will say this too, Danny, I really kind of liked the songs. I think one of the songs is a banger. I mean, it's pretty good.
Double Trouble is so silly.
Was it the Lion song that you really liked?
No, Double Trouble is the song.
Well, the whole point was they didn't sing Double Trouble in the end. And it was her ballad, and they got disqualified, but it was an emotional victory.
It was an emotional win, and they ended up together, which was great. Did you hate it, Danny?
Yes.
Will you ever watch it again?
Never. That's it. Years ago, I think I've talked about this many times. I'm afraid of heights, right? Because I'm afraid of things that can kill you. So heights are terrifying. People should be afraid of them and stop doing things that are dangerous. But I did this thing where I ran off a cliff and parachuted down. Right? What do you call it? I don't know if it's base jumping, parachute jumping with like a dude strapped to my back, right? And we did it. And I conquered my fear. And everyone's like, do you want to do it again? Wasn't it awesome? I said, no. It was the most miserable experience of my life, and it was so terrible, but I get to say that I did it. This is that. I get to say that I did it. Never again. If it's on somewhere, I'm not clicking yes. That's the one time I've seen it. It's filed away, but that chapter of my life is closed.
All right, we got to get moving because Chris Samuels is joining us next, the former Redskin, which will be cool to catch up with him and see what he's up to. Tommy, yesterday Dar suggested this movie. We rolled with it. So why don't you make the suggestion at the end of the show today before we get out of here in our final segment? And we'll see if that works. Grant and Danny, that's your Movie Club. You're listening to 106.7.
Spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.